irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from textile to gossip.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Succi. Welcome back to Max and Friends. I'm glad you're joining us here. And speaking of here, you know, we're not only here anymore, we're everywhere where you can hear podcasts. So that's like Spotify and Apple and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. I was told to tell you to go there. So go there, enjoy Max and Friends. We're here for 12 years this May. Where has time gone? Well, I know one thing. It has been a minute since I've been in the studio, and I'm glad that I'm here because tonight we have a great show. Joining me shortly is a cool guest and a best-selling author. Josh Sabera is a veteran marketing executive and television producer who's held many positions between Walt Disney, Warner Brothers Studios, Miramax, New Line Cinema, Lifetime. Lives in LA, cool dude, has some great books. He's the CEO of his own public relation firm, Breaking News PR. His first book, Porn Again, a memoir, and a novel, Enemies Closer, are available worldwide. So stay tuned because Josh is going to be joining me and we're going to have a good conversation, especially about Porn Again, about being a virgin until 31, which I think is the way to go, unless you found someone that you're into, but maybe you didn't, maybe you did. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it all here tonight on Max and Friends. And also we're going to talk about finding yourself. Have you found yourself? If so, tweet me at Max Tucci. Hit me up on Instagram at Max Tucci. Let me know your secrets to finding yourself. You know, we talk about it a lot here with Gordana Bernat, and we have a great time on Max and Friends and all the conversations we have here on LA Talk Radio, Max and Friends. Well, what are we going to do tonight? We're going to talk to Josh. I'm going to play some music. We're going to have a good time. We're going to hang out. So be involved. Tweet me at Max Tucci. Please Instagram me at Max Tucci, because now that we have that all cleared away, that it's no longer at Max Tucci Radio, that it's at Max Tucci, it's like so much easier to say, just at Max Tucci. You know, there's a great song, and we had her here on the show, Tiffany, and I think we're alone now. So we're going to play that, and when we're back from that, Josh is going to be here, so stay tuned. I'll be right back. I'm your host, Max Tucci, for Max and Friends.
Together and watch how you play.
Family Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Tiffany. I think we're alone now. We had a good time here with Tiff on the show. Well, listen, Max and Friends has turned into the best of shows, Max and Friend podcast on Apple. So go find that, the best of shows, and you'll hear over 12 years of shows that we're plucking out from latalkradio.com/Max. And Tiffany was one of those shows, so we're going to put that up there. But yeah, the Best of Shows podcast is coming up. It's already out, so there's some great shows that we've already posted. So go find those, follow them, love them, let me know about them. Listen, I want to know about your life when you were younger. Were you, like, tormented by schoolmates for being different? I know occasionally there were some times that I was where it was kind of, like, shitty to go to school, but, you know, it's just you figure things out, and the dark room was my place to go and just go in there and do photos and kick ass at photography and just do things amazingly. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that here tonight. I want to know, were you one of those kids who you grew up and you felt you were different, or were you one of those kids who, you know, growing up you were bullied, or you were a virgin for 3 decades? Well, my next guest is going to talk about all of that here tonight on Max and Friends. So welcome Josh Sabara to Max and Friends. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Max. Glad to be here.
So there's so much to talk about, because we have a similar life where school, a lot of my friends were also a lot of the older female teachers. We used to hang out together, and it was kind of difficult going to school. So I hear you about that.
Right.
But let's get into the genesis of where you grew up, where you went to school, and how was that for you?
I grew up actually in South Florida. I'm probably one of the rare native Floridians.
Yeah, you are totally the rare Floridian.
Yeah. So my parents are, my family's from New York originally, but they moved to Florida just before I was born. So I grew up there. So I went to, preschool, kindergarten, you know, all through high school in South Florida.
Where in Florida?
In West Palm Beach.
Okay. So a little bit progressive.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of parts of Florida, I mean, right. I think people don't realize sometimes that, you know, while Florida is, people don't look at Florida as the South, even though it's so geographically the South. Mm-hmm. I think people sometimes don't realize that, you know, when you look at Palm Beach County or anything, you know, from Orlando, say all the way north to Miami, you're talking about like a very metropolitan, you know, progressive, typically more progressive area of the state.
Right.
But what people don't realize is that the rest of Florida can be a whole different story.
Of course, just go west a little bit.
right. Yeah. So my experience, you know, in Florida probably wasn't specific to the region per se.
Got you.
I guess.
Just the ignorance.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, I think growing up, you know, at the time that I grew up, which was, you know, I was born in 1975, so I went to preschool in the late 70s and went to elementary school in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a time where things that we're talking about now weren't conversational.
Right.
And things that were different or perceived differences were things that, you know, kept you in the margins.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was always bullied. And I think the first time that somebody, I was about 6 the first time that somebody referred to me as, I think, homo was the word that somebody used. And it was a counselor at the summer camp, the day camp that my parents would send me to. And I didn't really even understand what he was referring to. Mm-hmm. I knew I felt different inside, but I didn't really know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just knew that the way it was said to me, it had to be something bad.
Right. I remember, like, with me, it was like, oh, Max gets his haircut at a salon instead of a barber. I'm like, what does that even mean?
Right. Yeah. Right. And you don't even understand at that age. It's just like, you're not conditioned to even know. I mean, how would we know at that point, you know? So for me, it was just like, I knew there was something different about me. I mean, people asked me when I knew I was gay. I mean, as early as kindergarten, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was always sort of this fiber of awareness, this idea that I was different, but I didn't, you know, you're not sexualized at that age, so you don't necessarily understand what that difference is.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you have people, you know, calling you names that, you know, somehow are related to whatever this is that feels different about you. And then it conditions you to feel like those differences are bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you, like, deal with that? Because then you became, like, super successful. Do you think that that attributed to your success was this?
Oh, being absolutely. Different? Absolutely. I think that drive, that idea of, you know, proving people wrong, that you're not a bad person, that you're not worthless, that you're not, that you are good enough. It's like you work overtime to compensate for whatever these quote shortcomings are in other ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was always wanted to be, you know, the best at everything because it was a way to, you know, I used so many things to get positive attention from people. So
what
whether
were some
it was,
of those things?
You know, being the star student with the highest GPA or, you know, as I got older, whether it was, you know, having, you know, I had an addiction to cosmetic surgery, which I talk about in the book because my, you know, my thought was, well, if I can be better looking or I can, you know, look perfect, you know, then it was my career, you know, how fast could I get, you know, could I move up the food chain in Hollywood? And then it became celebrity friends. And would people look more positive, look at me more positively if I was affiliated with people they deemed to be special?
That's amazing.
You know, so you basically, I used whatever I could to seem like, you know, to prove my value to people. And then, you know, finally, obviously, I got to a point where I realized that my value is myself and not these sort of trappings. But, it, you know, it took a long time to get there.
Now, you know, so we have such a similar life because I was like the same thing when I was in school. It was the bullying or this. But and then it kind of ended. And then I was like so involved with photography and just being the best at that and winning an awards for that. So it was kind of like, and then it was like I was working for agencies and shooting girls like from Next and Ford. And it's like, oh, Max with the models, blah, 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 blah. So everyone was kind of like, oh, like, you know, looking at me as a different lens when it was like, such,
right. It
such
becomes
bullshit.
Your cover.
Right. Exactly. So
yeah,
you were, it says you were uncomfortable in your own skin. How long did it take for you to realize like I'm me?
You know, I don't think that that's something I think I always say to people, like I never tie things up with a bow or profess to say that I have things figured out. I think we're all sort of a work in progress. Yeah. And I think it's always like that. I think if you're not always growing and learning that, you know, you're not really living your life or you're not acknowledging certain things about your life. So, you know, I would say it really was, you know, at 40 was sort of a turning point for me where I started to see things differently and work on myself more. But I would never say that I've gotten to a place where I'm completely accepting of myself or that I have it figured out. I think that it's sort of an ongoing process.
Well, you know, in the process, you've done a lot. You've written some great books. Literally have become all for every major company in Hollywood. So how did you get into the entertainment industry as an executive and a TV producer?
Interestingly, I had no connections in the business. I went to film school, and I interned. I always interned in throughout high school and college for companies that were affiliated with the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. And over the summers, you know, during school, I would go to New York and I would intern. I interned on a soap opera. I interned for CBS News. You know, I would put myself sort of in the pathway of the kinds of jobs that I'd want to have. Mm-hmm. And then basically, I was just tenacious about sending out resumes and letters and, you know, working tirelessly to get people at the studios and at entertainment companies to pay attention to me as sort of fresh blood coming out of college. And I was determined to leave school with a job in my field of interest. And, you know, fortunately, my resume caught the eye of, you know, enough people that I was able to get interviews. And I was able to, you know, walk out of college with a first job at Disney.
Wow.
So that was sort of the start, and it went from there. But I didn't know anybody in the business. None of it was based on a relative or knowing somebody who
you
worked
did it the
in,
old-fashioned
in entertainment.
Way.
It was sort of all organic.
Yeah, no,
I don't know
amazing.
That it would have happened that way today. You know, it was a very different time. There were no emailing resumes to people. I was printing resumes on stationery and mailing them, you know, with a postage stamp.
Yeah. You know, you remind me of Bob. There's a quote that Bob Proctor says is like, I don't know how it's going to get done, but I know it's going to get done. You know, and I think when we have the vision of what we want, it just manifests itself and unfolds naturally. And then all of a sudden we're like, this is what, like I created my own reality. So, yeah, it's
right. It's and it's interesting,
reality.
Like to the point you made before, you know, you look back as somebody who was told by so many people not to believe in myself, mm-hmm. that I believed in myself enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that I knew I could get out of it. I knew I could get myself to the place I wanted to be, and that somewhere, some way out there, that there was somebody who was going to appreciate whatever it was that I had to offer, even if other people weren't able to see that at that time. You know, I didn't know how I was going to do it, but somehow I guess I knew I was determined to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's kids listening right now because we're, you know, playing with these podcasts now. We're everywhere all over this world. So for kids who are going through this shit right now, like, what do you tell them? What do you want them to know?
You know, I think you have to find your tribe is mm-hmm. basically what it comes down to. There will always be, you know, it doesn't matter how good a person you are. It doesn't matter how good you are at something. It doesn't matter how studied you are, what kind of education you have, there will always be somebody who isn't feeling your vibe, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? And I think that you have to be, I think kids like today have to find the people who will celebrate them and celebrate their differences. And you find those people and you stick with those people who are going to lift you up.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to have. And I think that we're in a time now where I know that politically everything is sort of a mess and people are very divided in how they're seeing the world. But I also think that we're at a unique time where people are more accepting and people are open to conversations that they weren't before. Mm. And I think we just have to find the people that speak our language, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know, your vibe is your tribe and your tribe is your vibe, right? So
there you go.
It's important. And I remember like growing up, half the people that I was my tribe then, you know, like our frequency as we evolve and as we become, you know, more solidified in who we are, it evolves and our frequency raises, our vibration as, you know, who we are rises. And then through that, we find, you know, a whole new tribe. And so it's fun to like, you know, go through life and realize like where I am right now is exactly where I'm supposed to be. So enjoy the moment is what I tell kids.
Right. And there's something to take from everything. I mean, exactly. Look, every experience that you have, even when you're going through it, I mean, there were plenty of times where, you know, I go through certain things that you think you're not going to, you know, that you mm-hmm. can't see the value in them at the time, but every single thing, whether good or bad, you know, has turned out to have some value for me, whether it's something that I know not to repeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always say to people, there are many experiences that I wouldn't trade for anything, but I wouldn't repeat them either.
Yeah. No, I hear you. It's true. It's true. But you know what? Again, no experience is ever wasted. I mean, we say it here all the time. They really aren't. So, but we're going to play a song.
Right.
When we come back, we're going to talk about your book, Porn Again. We're going to talk about so much to talk about. Crazy world of online dating. I want to get into that because it's still crazy world of online dating. Porn star for hire. There's so much. Sexual fetishes. We're going to get into it all. We're going to talk about the books. We're going to talk a little bit about more of you. But before that, we're going to play a song right here, right now, which is one of my favorite songs. And I think y'all kids need to hear right now from The Greatest Showman. This is me. Stay tuned. Josh will be with me. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Max Tucci for Max and Friends.
Stranger to the dark, hide away, they say, 'cause we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are glorious. Wanna cut me down? I'm gonna send a flood, gonna drown them out. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, 'cause here I come. And I'm marching on to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen, I make no apologies. This is me. Fire away, 'cause today I drown in mine. This is brave, this is bruised, this is who I'm meant to be, this is me.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was This Is Me, one of my favorite songs. Anyhow, my guest tonight, we're back again with Josh Sabara. We're going to talk about his book, Porn Again, a memoir. So what inspired you to write that book, and where did you get the title from?
Well, the title is, you kind of have to read the book to get the title, because it's not what people think, mm-hmm, I believe.
Exactly.
people usually see that and think that I somehow was, worked in the adult industry. And again, not that, I think sex work is honest, good work, but
work is
that's
work.
Not where the title comes from.
Yeah.
There are a few pieces in the book that sort of explain how adult entertainment worked its way into sort of my evolution. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the title came from. And in ways that people probably wouldn't expect. Mm-hmm. I wrote the book because I was sort of at a crossroads in my life, and I was transitioning career-wise. I sort of had burned out a little bit on the Hollywood thing, and I was ready to start a new chapter. And I always, writing was sort of something that always interested me and was something that I was good at. I don't have much other, I don't really have a performing talent. Like, I'd love to be able to sing. I'd love to be able to write music. Mm-hmm. I can't do any of that. But writing was something that that had always sort of been an interest and a talent. And I felt that I had a story to tell, and I felt that there wasn't really something out there that was written in that style, sort of the tongue-in-cheek style that, mm-hmm, Porn Again is written in. And there wasn't, I think that it serves in different purposes for different people. I think for some people, it's sort of that it has that gay best friend feeling, that kind, mm-hmm, of chatty style that that people want to sit down on the couch and gab with. Mm-hmm. I think for parents of a child who's been different or marginalized in any way, it sort of gives parents a perspective on what they should be looking out for and how they can work with their kids and work with the communities to help kids who are being bullied or seen a certain way. I think for kids, and not just gay kids, but anybody who's grown up feeling different,
right,
whether it's because of a disability or their weight or their, mm-hmm, whatever it is, I think that those people can find themselves in those pages. So I think I just felt that there wasn't a piece of material out there that wasn't a wallowy, dark piece of literature, but something that was relatable and had a sense of humor to it and touched sort of on all of the cultural elements that are sort of important right now for people to be talking about.
Now, how long did it take for you to write the book?
It took me about 14 months to write the first draft, mm-hmm, and then with editing and revisions and that kind of thing, I would say about a year, just over a year and a half total.
Now, when you got the first copy in your hand, how did you feel,
yeah,
about being so honest about your life and talking about things that most people don't want to talk about?
I don't think I realized at the time, I don't think I realized how bold a choice it was. Mm-hmm. It just felt so natural to me because it was my life. And I don't think I realized, and I'm glad I didn't in a way, because I think if I had, I might have scared myself out of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you would have edited it?
I don't know. I mean, I sort of just sort of, you know, I unapologetically put it all out there. Mm-hmm. And I think when I wrote about it, it felt like I was writing about someone else.
Wow.
You know, it felt like I had taken 40 years and sort of captured them in these pages, mm-hmm. and that it really wasn't me, that this was somebody else's story, that I was writing about someone else. Mm-hmm. So it didn't feel like I was putting something so personal out there. And then when people started to read it for the first time, or it became, when it was out there in the world, mm-hmm. I think is when, you know, and people started to respond to it, reviews started to come in, and mm-hmm. I started getting letters from people who were relating to it on some level. I think that's when I realized, like, oh boy, I really, really did put myself on the line there. And, you know, it got all different kinds of reactions. There were some people who, you know, I still get letters every week, you know, from people who have, you know, identified themselves in my story or have seen themselves in the story and have responded that way. But then, of course, you get people who, you know, think that, you know, don't like the way they were portrayed, or they think there's some, you know, people think mm-hmm. it's about them, right. you know, or right. whatever. And, you know, you can't please everybody. But the way I look at it is that once you put something out there like that, it's not really yours anymore. Yes, my name's on the book. And yes, it's about me, and it's, you know, it's my story, but the book becomes somebody else's to interpret. It becomes someone else's to, you know, think what they want about or relate to in whatever way they want to relate to it. It becomes theirs.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't sit with every reader and tell them what you want them to think about that particular piece of writing or that particular story. It's theirs to interpret.
Right. And everyone's going to have their own takeaway from it anyway. You know,
of course.
But now the beauty of it is that it's out there. It's, you know, it talks about a lot of, like, it talks about a lot of details of your life. No, it's, I mean, super courageous to sit down and write a book, you know, where like your life is out there and now people know about it. But if this were to become a film, who would you want to play you?
You know, I've been asked that a lot. I always sort of saw, you know, that actor Jonathan Groff, who was on Glee.
Oh, yeah.
I always see either that or like a Darren Criss, you know, somebody sort of in that, you know,
would you want it to become a
group of actors? Hmm?
Would you want it to become a film?
Sure. You know, there had been some interest in that. Mm-hmm. In fact, it had been optioned, by somebody who worked on that show, The Good Wife.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of, we never got to a point where it, materialized in a way that worked for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just sort of moved on and wrote the next book and didn't really look back at it as that. But yeah, I mean, I think the material is important to be out there. And I, you know, I would love to see a version of it eventually, but
you know, when I heard the story, I was like, you know, this is so like, even though the book came out, what was it 2014, right?
Yeah, 14 or 15. Yeah.
So it's like, it's still like so relevant and like happening now. Like people still need to know, like there's a process to becoming who we are. But now,
yeah, of course. And the book also covers like very topical things. I mean, I address social media and how people relate to social media. And, you know, I address all of that in the book. So there are things, you know, it's very of the moment.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no shelf life on that.
No, it's
story.
Totally timeless. So, you know, one thing we were talking about before we went to the song was the crazy world of online dating.
Yeah.
Why do you phrase it as the crazy world of online dating?
Well, I mean, you read some of those stories. They're certainly not your average experiences. It's very interesting because online dating, I think people have become used to the idea that everybody is a profile, that everybody mm-hmm. is just a picture mm-hmm. and, you know, 240 characters, and that there aren't real people behind some of these things. And we, I think, treat people in a very disposable way.
Yeah, swipe left,
and
swipe
we
right.
don't pay attention. Like we don't right. pay attention that there are people with feelings behind all of these. Every picture you see, every dating profile you see, every Twitter account, those are real people.
Yeah, Majority of them, for disclaimer.
Well, yes. I mean, except for the bots and the, you know, all of that stuff. But for the most part, you're dealing with human emotion.
Right.
And I think that we have lost our ability to see that. We have lost our ability to be compassionate, to be kind, to, you know, treat people with dignity and respect. Even if we realize that that person isn't for us, maybe that's not our other half. That's okay.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make someone else bad or make their interests or their proclivities in the bedroom bad. It's just they might be different. They might not be for us.
Yeah.
They might be somebody we want as a friend, but that doesn't mean that we should treat them with disregard.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's very easy to swipe. And I think, you know, now that swiping online has turned into swiping in real life, where it's like, you know, you dismiss someone for something, maybe because they didn't have a certain look. Meanwhile, you're dismissing them and they could be everything you want, but you just don't like the way they had on their shirt that day or something, you know? So we've become,
right. But I mean, it's like people are very quick to have something critical to
right,
say
exactly.
online, like people and hide behind, you know, a digital profile,
yeah.
but you know, they won't necessarily find you when they want to say something positive.
Right.
You know, nobody's, you know, when was the last time somebody tapped you on the shoulder and was like, Max, thumbs up, I like your smile, but they'll press like on your Instagram.
Right.
And believe me, they'll be the first to tell you if they don't like a picture exactly. or you don't look good or you look too skinny right now or you've put on weight or maybe you should consider coloring your hair or all the criticisms that people are feel so comfortable offering when it's once removed and there's a digital layer between you. They would never say those things to you in person.
Right. Exactly. Unless they wanted a punch in the face. No, I'm kidding.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like,
you need to color your hair and lose some weight. Can you imagine?
One of my friends who's a comedian who you may have seen before, Ada Rodriguez, who is hilarious. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think she has a Netflix special on right now. And she always says, like, one of her taglines is, I get my likes in person.
It's the
which
truth.
Which I always think is such a smart and clever and intuitive, you know, few words. But, you know, I think that she's on to something.
You know, shoot, I was just at Broadway like a couple of weeks ago and saw Ain't Too Proud. And it's like, it's so nice at the end of that. Like, everyone stands up and claps. I'm like, wouldn't that be nice after every show? Like, everyone just stood up and like,
yeah.
It's like, we love that show. Yeah. It's like,
and you know what? There's nothing like theater yeah. to bring people together that
exactly.
way, you know, to have a sort of a shared live experience and, you know, get people sort of all on the same page. I think theater is a great equalizer and unifier.
Yeah. You know, I call the theater, it's like the DMV with a heart. Because everyone is like going, yeah. It's like there's everyone from every background. But at the end of the performance, everyone's like together and all just like joyfully like, standing ovations was for the Ain't Too Proud that I saw. It's like everyone from all walks of life are all just at this one moment together now as like one and just giving love. I'm like, that's what life should be all about.
But, I mean, where have you been all these years? I would definitely swipe right on you.
I haven't been on them.
Well, but I may have to just swipe right in person.
There you go. I get my likes in person, right? To steal
there
someone's
you go.
Line.
See, bringing it back.
Bringing it back. But, you know, I want to talk about being a virgin at 31 because we talked about it at
yes.
the top of the show. Was that was it by choice for you?
Well, I wasn't comfortable, as you said earlier, I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. So, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't, you know, my sexuality was something that I didn't explore until later.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, it, you know, I had no comfort level with it and mm-hmm. I had no experience relating to people on that level.
Did you date women at all?
I let everything else, you know, I let work be the most important thing in my life.
Yeah.
So I didn't make time for anything else.
When you were younger, did you have like any experiences with girls or women?
No.
None.
Mm-mm.
So it was just
no.
like flat line for you.
I always say the only woman I've ever been inside is the Statue of Liberty.
And your mother, right?
There you go.
But you know, what's interesting, you know, like we talk about sex a lot here on Max and Friends. And what's interesting
yep.
is like sexuality, especially. And when people come at like, oh, we have someone who was on that was straight and now they're gay, they like come at them. And it's like, wait a minute. It's like all just about like ice cream and it's fine and great flavor. You could have vanilla your whole life. And then all of a sudden you taste pistachio and like, damn, that's real good. It's still ice cream. It's just a different flavor. So that's our analogy.
Well, I think what people respond to, I think a hot button that people respond to right now is the idea that sexuality isn't a choice. And I think when people present it in a way where they say, oh, you know, now she's decided, she's like, you know, people look at it that way, I think that's where it becomes
sort of a... And they put
a
stamp on it. Yeah.
I think that's where it becomes a lightning rod, because, you know, people who are fluid or gay or whatever want people to realize that their sexuality is not necessarily something they choose. It's something that you're born with, be it, it could be fluid, it could change, it could move, it could whatever,
right,
but that it's not necessarily something that somebody's making a choice about. And I think that's where people get, you know, I'm not getting on either side of that conversation.
No,
I'm just saying, I think that's what it is that,
yeah,
that people respond to so passionately.
What I get
is,
so,
you know, I'm all for whatever, you know, people should live their life in a way that makes them happy. And as long as both people are 18 and it's consensual, I'm good.
You know, I agree with that. And I also think at this point in life, like, why should anyone really care who anyone goes to sleep with? I think it's so ridiculous that people actually care
exactly
who someone else is sleeping with. It's like, go,
exactly,
do something.
I don't
want to
know what
life
anybody's doing. Well, I take that back. Some people, I do want to know what they're doing.
A few people.
That's true.
But now, so 31. But,
I agree. What does that have to do with anything?
Zero.
I mean, I just don't understand why that's something that people spend any time thinking about.
Patterns, pathology, religion, you know, we don't have all night. But let's get back into you. 31.
Yes.
How was that experience for you at the first time at 31? And for me, I think it's great that, you know, you're able to talk about it.
The sexual experience was great. I had watched, I mean, that's one of the ways that porn plays into the story,
right,
is I had watched, you know, I had watched that. That was sort of my outlet. That was the only contact I had with sexuality was adult entertainment. And so I think I had studied enough that by the first time I actually went to bed with somebody, it was sort of a home run, because, you know, I sort of just copied a performance I'd seen, which turned out to be great. What I had to learn was that not every roll in the sheets is a Cirque du Soleil routine, you know? So what I learned was that, you know, you could have different kinds of sexual experiences with people,
right,
and not everything had to be, you know, swinging from the chandelier.
So now let me ask you, do you encourage being a virgin for that long? Because, like, I look at my niece, you know, she's 18. I don't know exactly what she's done. We haven't really talked about it. But it's like she talks to all these boys. And it's kind of like, you know, how porn was that outlet. Like, to me, it's like her outlet is talking to all these different boys. And I'm thinking, when it actually, like, comes down to for it to happen, like, she's not going to know what to do, because it's just been all technical for all these years. So do you encourage, like, waiting?
Well, I mean, that is true, that I think, again, it's that same thing we were talking about earlier about things online, and that layer of disassociation.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it makes it harder for people to relate in real life.
Yeah.
And I do think that there is an element of people not knowing how to interact and not know how to communicate a certain way. But no, I'm not a proponent of one thing versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how my story unfolded.
Right.
I think that there are different, that it's different for everybody. And there are some people who are, you know, in the right space in their life and the right time and the right maturity level, that, you know, people are ready for sexual experiences at different times. For whatever reason, for me, it came much later. I mean, listen, I certainly made up for lost time.
Oh, well, hello. I should hope so. I mean,
so,
why
you
wouldn't
know,
you?
But no, it's not the same for everybody,
yeah,
you know?
Of course.
I don't encourage, well, I don't think there's a right answer. Like I said, I think being, you know, legal and consensual are the two things.
And have
you
fun.
Know, and other than that, if both people want to be there and both people are of age, then
have
you
the
know,
best time of your life.
Who is anybody to say what works or doesn't?
That's right. I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. But, you know, time is the illusion of time is before us. I want to talk about Enemies Closer. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Max Succi, for Max and Friends. LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. My guest tonight is Josh Severa. Y'all, go get the book, Porn Again, a Memoir, and Enemies Closer. Complete different book, because now you're writing about a woman, a plus size woman.
Yeah.
Why this book?
Enemies Closer is, I'd call it contemporary commercial, fiction. I don't like to say that it's women's fiction, because I think there are, I think men enjoy some of that too. Mm-hmm. The idea for the book came from sort of all the books that I loved back in the day. It's sort of a contemporary throwback, if you will, to books like Judith Kranz's mm-hmm. I'll Take Manhattan, Scruples, Iris Rayner Dart's, before she wrote Beaches, she had written a book called Boys in the Mailroom. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of the idea of taking that, you know, fast-paced Hollywood setting, which is something obviously I know from the inside, and could give people a real glimpse inside, you know, sort of behind the red carpet, and also sort of speak to, again, I'm talking about, our protagonist in Enemies Closer is somebody who also feels like an outsider. So that's sort of a running theme, you know, in my writing, as somebody who's always felt like an outsider myself. But the idea for Enemies Closer was just to be, you know, to really entertain. You know, it's supposed to be a fun beach read that you can sort of check out, learn something, know what really goes on in Hollywood. You know, people think it's all glamour. This sort of gives you some of the grit behind everything. And that was sort of the idea, was just to be pure entertainment.
But now let me ask you a question, because I find it fascinating, not only to write one book, but two books. And even though they're so yep. different, you still bring aspects of your life into them. So how was it to go yep. from marketing to becoming an author? Or do you think you were always an author, you just were waiting for it to be the right time?
Yeah, I think I always sort of had that in me. But you know, these days, being a marketer is just as important in any sort of business that you have, or any sort of creative business. You have to be able to market yourself and market your work. So, you know, I think gone are the days where you'd go to studios or go to record labels or go to publishing houses and they take care of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much content out there now that you yourself have to be your own machine. You have to be able to market your own material. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to help these companies. Yes, you have companies behind you, but you have to help, you know, help them rise above the noise and get people to pay attention to your creative output.
Yeah. So we got to do our work at the end of the day.
I think the writing is 50% and mm-hmm. the marketing is the other 50%.
And speaking of marketing, you have a whole ton, you have like a shop. You have everything from aprons to mugs to bags to shirts. What made you create this collection?
Yeah, that was kind of, it's funny, that was a, that sort of wasn't something I set out to do, but people wanted Porn Again. People wanted things with quotes on them, and they wanted Porn Again merchandise. So that's sort of how it started, was there, people kept asking for it. So I did that. And then some of the quotes in Enemies Closer, people would laugh at, and they would say, that would be really funny on a t-shirt, or that'd be really funny on a baseball cap or a mug. And so that's sort of how it started. It wasn't with, you know, it wasn't for any other reason. And so it was really just to make that stuff available to people who wanted it, who were fans of the book. And then I came up with my own line of that I call side eye t-shirts that are just like different sayings or stupid things that I'll comment or make some quip or say something silly to someone. And I just laugh at it and think it should be on a t-shirt. So I throw it on there.
And then boom, it's on a t-shirt. Life quotes
there
from
you
Josh.
Go. There you go.
Well, the illusion of time is upon us, and we got to wrap this up. Speaking of wrapping things up, y'all, if you want to have fun, I don't know, wrap it up, have fun, do what you need to do. Before we let you go, give us some inspiration for people who are listening tonight or going through some rough times and they're just like, you know what? Life is shitty right now. I'm the different one. What do you say for them to take into this week with them?
I say that a good night's sleep is the best thing you can have. And then the sun comes out tomorrow. You know, I mean, I sound like Little Orphan Annie, but the truth is that, you know, everything can look different 10 hours later.
Yeah. It's true.
You know, and if you think that, you know, when things are dark or things aren't looking good, you kind of have to, you can hit pause for a second and just sort of stop. And, you know, you know, time kind of helps.
Yeah.
And helps you to see things differently or gives you a different perspective. And, you know, it's never as bad as it is in that moment you're going through it. And you can sometimes, you know, a few hours can make you see the difference.
Isn't that the truth? Well, I'm so grateful that you joined us here tonight on Max and Friends. You're going to have
Thank you.
We'll have to, you know, let's be transparent. You're supposed to be here in the studio tonight, but I was like, it's not happening because I got a cold when I was on the plane. So I was like, I think it's best that we do this over the phone. So I appreciate you for being so flexible.
But we can always do it in person anytime.
Cool. We'll give each other likes in person.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Everyone for tuning in. I love you for listening. Tune in every Sunday night to Max and Friends, or you can go find us on latalkradio.com/Max, or just follow me on Instagram at Max Succi, and you can find out where you need to find all the shows. But what I want to let you know is that I love you all. I really do. And, you know, it really does. We create our own reality. So create happiness in your reality. And there's one thing that I want to read from this song that was on tonight. And it is, when the sharpest words want to cut you down, remember to send a flood and drown them out, because you are the creator of your reality. And don't let other people put words into your life that aren't for you. Smile, love yourself, look in the mirror and tell yourself, I love you. Because if anyone else does, I know I do. I love you for tuning in. I got to go. Good night and good karma. I'm your host, Max Tucci, for Max and Friends. Until next time, take life to the max.